Did they care to live? She thought. They did not seem to care even for the effort of raising that question. She saw a few faces who seemed to care. They were looking at Galt with a desperate plea, with a wistfully tragic admiration, and with hands lying limply on the tables before them. These were the men who saw what he was, who lived in frustrated longing for his world. But tomorrow, if they saw him being murdered before them, their hands would hang as limply, and their eyes would look away, saying, "Who am I to act?" "Unity of action and purpose," said Mooch, "will bring us to a happier world." Mr. Thompson leaned toward Galt and whispered with an amiable smile, "You'll have to say a few words to the country later on after me. No, no, not a long speech, just a sentence or two, no more. Just hello, folks, or something like that, so they'll recognize your voice." The faintly stressed pressure of the secretary's muzzle against Galt's side added a silent paragraph. Galt did not answer. "The John Galt plan," Wesley Mooch was saying, "will reconcile all conflicts. It will protect the property of the rich and give a greater share to the poor. It will cut down the burden of your taxes and provide you with more government benefits. It will lower prices and raise wages. It will give more freedom to the individual and strengthen the bonds of collective obligations. It will combine the efficiency of free enterprise with the generosity of a planned economy." Dagny observed some faces. It took her an effort fully to believe it, who were looking at Galt with hatred. Jim was one of them, she noted. When the image of Mooch held the screen, these faces were relaxed in bored contentment, which was not pleasure, but the comfort of license, of knowing that nothing was demanded of them and nothing was firm or certain. When the camera flashed the image of Galt, their lips grew tight and their features were sharpened by a look of peculiar caution. She felt with sudden certainty that they feared the precision of his face, the unyielding clarity of his features, the look of being an entity, a look of asserting existence. They hate him for being himself, she thought, feeling a touch of cold horror, as the nature of their souls became real to her. They hate him for his capacity to live. Do they want to live? She thought in self-mockery. Through the stunned numbness of her mind, she remembered the sound of his sentence, "The desire not to be anything is the desire not to be." It was now Mr. Thompson who was yelling into the microphone in his briskest and folksiest manner. "And I say to you, kick them in the teeth, all those doubters who are spreading disunity and fear. They told you that John Galt would never join us, didn't they? Well, here he is in person of his own free choice at this table and at the head of our state, ready, willing, and able to serve the people's cause. Don't you ever again, any of you, start doubting or running or giving up. Tomorrow is here today, and what a tomorrow. With 3 meals a day for everyone on earth, with a car in every garage, and with electric power given free, produced by some sort of a motor the like of which we've never seen. And all you have to do is just be patient a little while longer. Patience, faith, and unity, that's the recipe for progress. We must stand united among ourselves and united with the rest of the world as a great, big, happy family, all working for the good of all. We have found a leader who will beat the record of our richest and busiest past. It's his love for mankind that has made him come here, to serve you, protect you, and take care of you. He has heard your pleas, and has answered the call of our common human duty. Every man is his brother's keeper. No man is an island unto himself. And now you will hear his voice. Now you will hear his own message. Ladies and gentlemen," he said solemnly, "John Galt, to the collective family of mankind." The camera moved to Galt. He remained still for a moment. Then, with so swift and expert a movement that his secretary's hand was unable to match it, he rose to his feet, leaning sidewise, leaving the pointed gun momentarily exposed to the sight of the world. Then, standing straight facing the cameras, looking at all his invisible viewers, he said, "Get the hell out of my way."